And so as we go forward here and we start to talk about parenting and your just awesomeness as being a positive what is it? Positive parental
Parenting
specialist?
specialist, yes.
Yes, okay. So as we talk about this, I think one of the most important things that I wanted to bring up was the landscape that we live in today. So the landscape that we live in today is a very, very different landscape than when we were young, let alone when our parents were young. And I think that as we're getting older now, what I'm seeing is a greater and greater division between the parent and the child. So you go back to the 1900s and you had, parents and children one way. You fast forward 20 years, 30 years, we've had, introduction of some technologies, but not on the scale that we're having today. And I think that the way the landscape, the way the world is changing, the division between parents and children is becoming greater and greater and greater. And I would love just to hear your thoughts about this, your opinions on this, and how we can bring the families together closer rather than getting further apart.
That's such a great point that you've brought up there, because that is one of the things that I specialize in creating, which is connection between parent and child. And you're right, the way life was for me when I was young, I'm 34 now, it was massively different to how life is for my children now. Like, they're experiencing a very different time, a very different way of living. Technology's everywhere. It's a massive influence. It can be seen as a bit of a negative distraction as well. And it's really important to keep that element of connection with your child, because, you want to have a relationship with your child. You want your child to be able to come to you if there's an issue. You want to be able to help your child. I mean, that's the role of a parent, is to guide your children. But, a lot of people, a lot of parents are finding that difficult nowadays, because their children are getting caught up with social media, what's on TV, what's going on in, in the world, and technology, and this app and that. Hands up, anyone that knows me knows I'm a pen and paper, old school kind of girl. I don't really deal with techie things. Maybe that's, not such a great thing nowadays, but I often find that it is a distraction for young people as well. And I think a lot of the times, as parents, I've been there, I hold my hands up. We've used things such as the TV or technology or whatever, almost like childcare a lot of the time, kind of like sit them in front of the TV. Don't bother me right now. I need headspace or to do whatever, But I think when you have that too much, it creates massive disconnection. And the key here between parent and child relationships is to have connection.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that it's evident in society today, and you see this all around the world. I don't think it matters where you are in the world geographically, but that connection is it sometimes seems very, very broken or like inappropriate. Like the connection is either like completely severed, broken, it's not working, or we see parents maybe not being parents to their children, not guiding them, not helping them figure it out, And
And
so
that's difficult, yeah.
it is difficult. I mean, I think that I mean, look, I've done a lot of traveling back in the day. I did some missionary work in Albania, and it was explained to me that the parents of the children at that time grew up in communism, and the children that we were, working with doing some missionary work, grew up without communism. So the distance between the way that the parents thought and the way the children thought was so different. It was generational. Even though age-wise and number-wise, we're only talking, right, 25, 20 years, 25 years, but the way of thinking was so different, there was a disconnect, a complete disconnect. And I think we're seeing that a lot today. And I don't blame technology. I mean, this is the way things are moving. I think it's going to happen. I think technology exposes people. I don't think that, it's worse off now. I'm just saying that there's a tremendous disconnect. How do we bring the connection back?
You see, this for me, with my work, I know a lot of people, they may disagree with me, but I always say that, if you want to change the behavior of a child or you want to change the dynamics in a relationship, it has to start with the parent first.
Yeah.
And it has to actively mean that that parent has to want more within their relationship with their child and want better. But then that also has to mean that the parent has a mindset that's open enough to see that they can have better and that they can do things differently to get a better outcome. So like for me, I grew up with, you know, the whole old school children shouldn't be seen, should be seen and not heard. And, you know, don't cry, I'll give you something to cry for, you know. And I grew up with a basic West Indian culture where you just did as you were told and that was it. And it was very militant and your parents were often seen as dictators, but you knew they loved you. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of attention on the child's emotional needs. It was often very dismissed. But if you go backwards and you actually, like for me, I did a lot of research and I saw that actually my parents didn't have their emotional needs met as well. And their parents most probably didn't. So there's a lot of stuff that was being passed down through the generations.
Yeah.
And for me, I went on such a journey in my life post 16. I realized my emotional needs were not met. And then I became a mother. For me, that was a very powerful thing that happened to me that made me think, I don't want my children to feel the way that I did. And I kind of went on my own mission to make sure that that wasn't going to happen, you know, as much as I could, you know, make that happen. And so I came with the idea of creating and obtaining a connection and then maintaining it.
Right.
Because that is key. You can't just kind of come together with somebody or with your child and do it for like a week or whatever and or whatever you're doing and then that's it. It's something that has to be consistent. It has to be part of a relationship that's growing and that a relationship that kind of comes from a place of heart-centered, you know, respect, love, attention, you know, and all of those things intertwined. And, you know, for me, I think connection is very much, I think we discussed this on the last live as well, where I think you asked me a question about face-to-face connection and how it differs to like online and things like that. For me, I still stand by the fact of having face-to-face connection or one-to-one time with your child to create that bonding process. Like you could go through hell and back with your child, but if you invest a small amount of time with your child to have one-to-one and that kind of human connection with your child, I guarantee it will change, and it will change in a positive way.
Yeah. And I think that you hit the nail on the head that it has to start with the parent. You know, it has to start with the hierarchy.
Yeah.
You know, like when you look at this, like, you know, I don't believe, look, I have three young kids and I make it like, I mean, as they get older, I don't have to make it very clear right now, but I don't plan on being their friend. I do plan on being their dad. We may do friendly stuff together.
Yeah.
That friends might do, you know what I mean? Like we might play sports, we might go to a concert together, you know, but like at the end of the day, like I'm the dad. And I think that that's important because that, in my opinion, gives them the comfort and the protection to know that, hey, even though we disagree, they can always fall back on me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, or?
Totally makes sense. Like I follow a very, you know, similar principle to you. Like, you know, I'm your mom and I'm going to be there for you and everything, no matter what. We'll have fun times and we'll have play times, but there's a line you don't cross. We, you know, we still have respect for each other and I'm still your parent because I'm here to guide you and be there for you.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would agree with you in that kind of parenting style.
Yeah, and I think that at right now, a lot of the things that I'm seeing, and not a lot, but I mean, you know, you see it often enough where you see, you know, children who are just unruly, misbehaved, and we hear from the parent all the time, you know, when they're confronted, well, not my child, you know, when the reality is that they should really be listening more than talking so they have a better idea of who their child is.
Completely agree. I mean, this is something that I get a lot of my clients to do as well. I will give them like really basic and simple activities to do with their child. And the point of that is to create connection, create bonding, but also to up their listening skills. Like if you ever sit down and listen to your child, you will get so much information from them. You'll get a lot of comedy from them, but you'll get insight into their brain and how they think and what their thoughts and feelings are. And that is massive, because with that, you can use that in a way to help to create more connection with your child as well, you know?
I think that a lot of people, especially people who we've talked to who, you know, suffered with addiction and stuff like that, I think that, you know, this lack of connection with family is a really, really important issue that needs to be discussed and looked at. You know, we live in a world right now where you basically sometimes we find children raising themselves. In a way, because of the technology and because of the landscape and the environment they live in today, the information that the parent may have almost makes the parent feel to the child obsolete, because we used to go to our parents for information.
Yeah.
Now we can ask Alexa.
Right? Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's more than just the information. There has to be the emotional care. But I'm also very careful, and I'm very interested to know what you think about this. I'm also very careful about, you know, protecting too much, you know, and not allowing the child to actually experience the good and the bad, right? Early on in development stages, without them experiencing the bad, how can they be equipped to go out into the real friggin' world?
I agree with you. And I went through this myself not too long ago when my daughter transitioned from primary school to secondary school. And it was this massive thing that came up for me when I thought, oh my God, I've not experienced this fear before. And I wanted to protect her. I wanted to take her to school every day, pick her up. I wanted to warn her about all of this stuff out there that, you know, could harm her.
Yeah.
And I think I may have said one or two things, and she came back to me. She said, yeah, Mum, I'm actually petrified of leaving the house now. And I thought, whoops, went overboard a bit. But I took myself away and I sat with myself for a while and I said, you know what? This is my stuff. This is my issues and all my fear coming up. It's not hers. And so it's unfair to project that or kind of throw it onto her.
Yeah.
I'm coming with good intentions, but I think with a lot of us, we have to be aware that you're right. You know, we will never be able to protect our children from everything. It's impossible, and they have to experience life. But we can offer advice and guidance in terms of, you know, certain situations or what they can do to help themselves should certain situations arise, you know, without potentially terrifying them and not. You know,
I sometimes think, you know, it's better to prepare them than prepare them for the worst so that they can actually, you know, be able to live in society and work in society. So here's a question to you. For parents who have raised their children and they have children that are older, let's say they're, you know, 21 or let's say they're 18 or, you know, along those lines, and that disconnect is really, really great. Is there a way to kind of fuse it to bring it back? Or
it's really dependent on several factors. It's dependent on the circumstances that led to the disconnection.
So
it's dependent on
that first, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So kind of recognizing, well, what has caused that disconnection? You know, was it trauma? Was it abuse? Was it whatever, you know?
Okay.
And then kind of recognizing their own thoughts and feelings around that. Maybe tapping into the inner child as well, because a lot of us have stuff, you know, that we have repressed from a very young age that has affected our relationships with our parents, you know?
Yeah.
And for me personally, I've found something that has helped me, because I have had not the best of relationships with my parents. You know, like in particular, my mother, God bless her. But, you know, I've reached a stage as an adult where I've learned how to hold space for myself and see things as an adult, not a wounded child, which a lot of us do perceive things from. Okay. To really kind of accept people for who they are. Again, it's dependent on the circumstances. Some people are better off just kind of staying away or just staying disconnected. But for me, it helped me to accept her for who she was and go from there, if that makes sense. And kind of love her, come from a space of loving her for who she was and who she is, not who I maybe wanted her to be. And for me, I found peace around that. I've worked with clients where, you know, they've been separated from their children for years and they're trying to rebuild a relationship back with them. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, it always depends on the personal situation that has occurred prior to that as to how you would maneuver forward. But in the majority of cases, I solely believe there is a way forward. Mm-hmm. It's just how you go about it. And again, it will kind of be down to what kind of led you there and what kind of took place in the first place.
Do you think sometimes that the parent has to want it more than the child, or the child has to want it more than the parent? I mean, I feel like from being a parent, and having children, like to have a relationship that would be estranged from my children, I would do whatever I need to do as a parent to make that work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, without sacrificing, I mean, but that's what a parent does. We're supposed to sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, I don't know. I'm curious. What do you think? Should it come from the parent first or the child first? We're talking about, you know, distant relationship between parent and child.
And the child is in the adult years. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, what do you consider that? Would you say 21?
I'll say, yeah, from that upwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, it takes two people to create a relationship and to want a relationship to go forward, whether that's parent and child or whether that's, you know, you and your partner or whatever. It has to take two willing participants. Mm-hmm. For me, in the adult years, I've often said to clients, you know, look, if you want to reach out to your daughter, do it. Yeah. You know, if you genuinely want to do it and you're coming from your heart, do it. You know, where, and I've said the same thing to the children, you know, if you want to do it, do it. I don't necessarily, I mean, ideally, and I would say, yeah, as a parent, for me, talking as a parent, I know if I was disconnected from my children, it would 100% be me trying to have that with them. Like, I wouldn't be sat back, because the thing is, like, people misinterpret communication, you know, behavior and things like that. You know, if there's been a disconnection, you don't know if your child's kind of misinterpreted something that you've said or done or whatever, and they're hurt, or, you know, and I just feel as the parent, ideally, we should be the ones to reach out.
I would too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just because that's just me being a parent. That's how I feel I would have to, I would have to address that. So, you know, I feel also that, again, we see this a lot, especially when we talk to different people, you know, here on the I Choose series, and just growing up in general. I mean, this is, you know, this foundation is about educating people and inspiring people. So, yes, we want to do all the inspirational stuff, you know, tell people that, you know, that they can make choices in their life that can change their life forever. Like, I really wholeheartedly believe in that.
Yeah.
But there's an education piece to it as well, you know. If you're going to make a choice to change your life, but you're not going to educate yourself on the new choice that you're making, it could be a scary, dangerous place.
Yeah.
So I see that we have a lot of people, and I find myself in this place sometimes, you know, looking back rather than looking forward. Is that a natural thing that human beings do? You know, oh, the good old days, the way things used to be. You know, the landscape, the environment that we live in today has changed so much that the old way of doing things, you know, doesn't exist. You know, I saw some people that I went to high school with. I went to two different high schools because I moved around a lot. And one of the high schools, you know, I'm connected with a couple of people, and they're planning their 20-year high school reunion. And they're posting up all of these photos from, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
No Instagram, no cell phones, no, you know what I mean? Just a totally different world, you know? And anyway, so I guess, you know, we're talking about this and I like to keep it conversational, but if there was a question, you know, is there a danger in looking back rather than looking forward?
I would say there's a danger in looking back if you insist on looking back too often. It's good to be able to look back and go, yeah, the good old days, you know, but it's good to kind of be present and say, yeah, I'm having a great time now. And it's good to potentially look forward and go, yeah, I can't wait to see what's coming in. And all this new stuff is, you know, it's all enhancing our lives. I think there are some people that kind of look backwards too much. And I think it's a very common thing to do, like for us as human beings, is to kind of go back to what we feel we know, what is secure, what is comfort, what is, you know, stability for us. New, when we're looking kind of going forward with new things, it's new, you know, and some people associate fear with that and the unknown and, well, how is it going to affect you? You don't know. Whereas there's a comfort in knowing what you know. And some people can stay in that comfort zone and not allow themselves to grow and then find it difficult to kind of move forward, you know. And then you have some people that just want to not even pay any attention to the past and just keep moving forward.
Never look back.
But I think, yeah, like, don't look back. I'm one of these people where I don't go back or look back at anything. Like, literally, if I have somewhere to go and I have to walk backwards, that upsets me because I just can't do it. You know, I have to get off at the stop after or whatever and maneuver my way around it. I just don't, because I always keep my focus on going forward.
Keep looking forward, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about estranged and, you know, parents and the distance and making that connection and stuff, where does forgiveness play a part in that whole piece?
Well, you know, number one, you can't want to create connection if you're still harboring anger or sadness or emotions around that that actually is prohibiting you from creating a connection. You know, I couldn't say to you, Michael, you know, let's be friends again after we've fallen out for 20 years and I feel you did something terrible to me. And I'll say, okay, I'm willing to forgive and forget, but I'm not really. I mean, for me, like I say, I think if you want to create a connection with somebody and move forward, there has to be an element of forgiving what happened, forgiving that person, depending again on what they did or whatever and your perspective on it. And then forgiving yourself a little bit as well and allowing yourself to move forward and giving yourself permission to move forward from that as well. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and communication has to be a huge part of that as well. Being able to communicate. And being able, like, communication is not just about talking, it's about listening. That's why it's called communication. And so, you know, in order to get to that place of forgiveness, there has to be that communication. Now, we live in a world where communication is instant today, instant, and yet there is such a lack of it.
Yeah.
Why is that? I think, you know, I can't blame the technology because it's all available. It's all there. Anybody can talk to anybody about anything at any time. You know, you're in the UK right now. I'm in Florida. And we're having a conversation about this. Communication key, but yet behavior hasn't changed.
It is interesting, isn't it?
It is.
It is interesting because, like you say, technology has allowed us to communicate in so many different ways. And, you know, yet we still have similar patterns of behavior. For me, I found that a lot of people that have issues with communicating, whether that's speaking or listening, sometimes there's a lot of fear behind it.
Fear?
You know, and yeah, you know, like especially with like parent-child relationships in the older years.
Yeah.
You'll often find a parent, for example, that is maybe having that moment with their child or whatever, and they're supposed to be listening, but they don't really, because they're afraid of what's going to be said and that they're going to have to take responsibility for that or for what they did. And for the child, you know, there's often fear behind speaking and speaking from your heart and that place of pain, because it makes you feel vulnerable. And nobody around here likes to feel vulnerable, you know. So it's a difficult feeling. But for me, in my experience, a lot of it has got to do with fear. And again, the unknown of, if I say this, what will happen? Or if I actually hear what they say to me, how will that make me feel? I don't know, you know.
That's so interesting, because I don't mind being vulnerable at all. Like, I could be completely honest with myself and who I am and who I've become and the journey that I'm on, because I really believe in my heart that this life is really a journey, you know, and it's made up of memories. But when I, you know, when I get to the end of my journey, I want to be able to look back at those memories, and I want to at least be honest. I recognize that it's not all going to be peaches and cream. I recognize it's going to be heartache, pain, suffering. I get all that.
Yeah.
But I do want to look back and I want to have a sense of gratitude of being the truest version of myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a desire that, you know, as it's in me. I don't know if it's in everybody, but it's a desire in myself, you know. And I also recognize that I'm not there yet. I don't have it figured out. I'm not there.
Yeah.
Part of my own personal, you know, quest with this whole I Choose series is talking to professionals and people like yourself where we can talk it out and have these kind of insightful conversations that, you know, hopefully can bring more than just us to the level that we're supposed to be, to the person that we're,
yeah,
you know, we were born to be.
Yeah. I agree. I completely agree. I think when you're comfortable being your authentic self and who you truly are and you're aligned with that, there's a sense of freedom about that that, you know, is just very, very powerful and very beautiful at the same time. And, you know, I'm like you, I'm very open. I'm very okay with being asked anything. I'm very, you know, spill my story, whatever, you know, because I've learned how to be vulnerable and how to actually be okay with that.
Yeah.
Whereas if you took me back 10 years ago, it would be shut down, straight face, not discussing this, you know, and that was coming from a fear-based place as well. But you're right when you say, like, we're all on a journey. And, you know, for me, I think part of our journey is to learn about ourselves and to develop and grow emotionally. And to, by doing that, you know, by connecting with people, that helps us to do that as well, you know, and our experiences, what we learn from them and what we take from it, you know, it all helps in terms of our development and building that relationship with ourselves first and foremost.
I agree. And as you know, I know we've, you know, we're talking about tech and stuff like that, but as as the tech advances, privacy decreases, social media increases, you know, will there be room for the individual who just wants to shut down? Will there be room for that person? Or will behaviors be forced to happen, be forced to change? Because we're talking about a change of behavior that's adapting. Like, you know, you got people right now like us who are on, we're doing a Facebook Live, you know, we've got 1,500 people following us. Like, we're putting ourselves out there, we're talking, and then you have people who are shutting down. As we go 5 years into the future from now, 10 years, no, I don't have a crystal ball. But will there be room, or will people that are growing up in this new world be forced, right? We're seeing people, they constantly putting their feelings out on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, their photos of the tears with the makeup running down their face is getting more likes than the smile. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, maybe behaviors are changing. And maybe we haven't seen it yet as far as how it'll fully adapt and, you know, that next phase for humanity. But
yeah.
I don't know. I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
I mean, I can already see slow movement forward with that. You know, we're all kind of, we've got so many things going on in the world. And one of the biggest things I've noticed recently over the last few years is the acknowledgement of mental health, that it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah,
right?
It's huge right now.
So if we went back 10, 20 years,
not okay,
we wouldn't have had any of that, you know, be like, get on with it, get over it, you're lying, or I don't see anything wrong with you, you know. And I think for that, things like that, I think there's going to be more of that coming in. There's more of an openness within the world, I've noticed as well. People coming up and really kind of being their authentic selves, people standing up for themselves, people speaking their truths. I can only envision that actually there will be a natural flow of, you know, it's, hey, it's okay to lift that wall a little bit, or it's okay to kind of open up a little bit, you know, and the encouragement of seeing the world changing, hopefully, will lead people down that way, you know, where they don't feel that maybe they have to be so protected or so guarded, and that actually it's safe to speak your truth sometimes and open up.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is something I truly wholeheartedly believe that, you know, and I see it here anyway. I see a huge disconnect and a struggle with this, but I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that communication is the key to that. And that if somebody is being there, we don't all have to be evangelists. You know, we can allow people to be who they are. And if we disagree with them, that's okay too. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't have to have a collective consciousness where everyone thinks this is the way things are going to be or should be. I think that people can be, you know, I just feel like, you know, I don't think there needs to be a collective consciousness. I think there needs to be an acceptance of individuality.
I agree.
Yeah. And allowing people to kind of say what they think and be who they are. And look, I'm not a huge fan. I'll say this, even though, you know, I try my best to be politically correct. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's killing. Mm-hmm. I think it's killing and stagnating like people's ability to just talk freely.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, that's not a popular opinion because I know everybody wants to be politically correct. But I just feel like, you know, there's it's okay for people to be like, it's okay if people don't like you. It's all right. You know?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have any effect on you. You should still be who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
And I agree with that because I think, you know, I've never really kind of been comfortable with the whole term collective whatever, you know, because who says I want to be part of that anyway? You know, I want to be me. And if I didn't feel I fit in with that, am I then going to feel isolated or like an outcast because I don't fit into that circle? You know, I think it's so important that we can just be who we are. And yeah, have respect for each other. You don't have to agree with everything that I say. I don't have to agree with everything that you say. But if there's a respect there, then, you know, there's connection there. And it's just, that for me feels a lot more comfortable. Like even with my work, okay, I'm a positive parenting specialist, but I never come in from an angle of with any client where I say, you're doing this wrong or your parenting style is wrong. We're going to fix this or we're going to do whatever. I come from a standpoint of, okay, this is how you've been parenting. If you want to change something, we may need to enhance a few things or whatever. You know, I don't like coming from a place of judgment or making anybody feel bad for what they know or who they are.
Or what they don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah, and that's, again, that always, you know, just came, it comes down to communication. We may, you know, you're talking about disagreeing and not agreeing with, you know, what I think or what you think and having, but just the ability and the desire to be mature and have communication and have conversation. There is so much that we can learn from each other.
Yeah, there is.
You know,
there really, really is.
And I think that political correctness and this whole like movement that I see happening is stopping people from learning. The only way you learn is when you're uncomfortable. It's
totally.
It's the only way. You know, you don't learn about yourself by sitting in a room by yourself. You know, maybe you do. Maybe there's some mindfulness and meditation. Great. But you learn about yourself when you're faced with adversity and challenges. Yeah. People that you don't like, people that don't like you, you know, that's when you learn about who you are and what you can bring to the world and what you have to offer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's in the disagreement that we're able to, like, you know, agree, right? Like,
yeah.
Achieve some great, beautiful, you know, place in our mind and in our thoughts. And without going there or with needing permission to go there or with, it's a disaster. a disaster. So.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm glad that you agree because I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And you are the specialist.
Well, you see, the thing is, like when I work with clients and they'll come and tell me, oh, you know, my child did this or they did this and they need to stop doing this. And how do I change them? And they're upsetting me and I'm losing sleep over them, you know, with all of this kind of energy there. And I sit down, I just go, right, okay, number one, what is this teaching you about you?
Yeah.
Let's have a look at you. Let's turn that mirror and say, okay, when your child did this, how did that really make you feel? What did that trigger inside of you? So, you see, it's about learning about yourself in every aspect, including parenting, building that relationship with yourself. And, you know, you're going to learn new things about yourself in every situation you step into, you know. Absolutely. And like you pointed out, the person that really irritates you at work or wherever, what is it they're triggering within you? What is it showing you about you? You know, and I think when you can kind of step away from a situation and turn that mirror inwards, it's a special thing.
I have to say, I think that there's an exercise that I was confronted with a long time ago, and I would share this exercise with anybody. sit down and just think of that one person in your life that you despise and write down all the things that you despise about this person. You don't like this, you don't like that, they're this, they're that, all the things, write it down, be honest with yourself. You're never going to show anybody anyway. And then ask yourself, how much do you have in common?
Yes.
With that person. When you sit down and look at it on paper, oh, this person's controlling. And you really sit down and say, well, you know, I'm trying to control this right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's a great example and a great exercise for people if they can open up and be honest, you know, about the things that they don't like in other people. We can also see the things that we don't necessarily like in ourselves.
It's again, that's true. It's an exercise I actually get a lot of my parents to do as well, where if, for example, they'll come and say to me, my child's speaking to me in a very aggressive tone, or, you know, they're just not speaking to me in a very polite manner. And I'll get them to sit down and then I'll say, okay, how do you speak to your child?
Right off the bat, right?
Yeah. You know, I throw it right back on them, because I honestly believe that we have our mirrors. Our mirrors are everywhere. So like you say, if that person is irritating you and the things that you don't like about that person, it's likely that they're mirroring you in different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's always good to look inwards. Always.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I also wanted to mention the fact that you are an author as well. Can you tell us a little bit about the books you've written?
Okay, so I've written three books. The first book was called What About Me? And it was based on my eldest daughter and accepting her new sibling into the home, which she found really, really difficult. The books come from the perspective of the child. So it gives parents a chance to really kind of step into the child's mind and understand how they're perceiving things and how they're processing things. The book comes with affirmations that you can do with your child, tools and tips and techniques. And it can also be used as a workbook where there's pages at the back for if you want to sit and read it with your child, if the child wants to draw some pictures or write anything down that comes to them. And, you know, same for the parents. It's something that can create connection. The second book follows very much the same outline of the first book, and it's called Big, Big World. That was based on my second daughter. I thought, you know, if I wrote one for the eldest, I had to write one for the second one. You know, it's only fair.
You'd never live that down.
And that one is based on just feeling overall anxiety at school, going shopping and everyday stuff, and just feeling really small in such a big, big world. And again, that kind of followed the same outline with the affirmations, tools and techniques to help your child. Again, that book was created to create connection for parent and child. My books are very simple and easy to read, to be honest with you, because I didn't want to create anything that was super complex, super time consuming, and would kind of put you off before you did it, if that makes sense.
Of course.
So those two came out. And the third book I co-wrote, called The Woman I'm Becoming, and that is aimed at females from 13 and up. So over 20 specialists came together and we all were allocated a chapter, and I focus on the chapter of relationships and, more importantly, the relationship within yourself first. So I basically give an overview of my life post 16, what I went through, what I learned, and how I came out and am the person I am today.
Awesome. Is that the latest book?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hoping to bring out a couple more next year to add to the series for the parenting books.
Okay.
For What About Me and Big, Big World.
And people who are interested, where can they pick one up?
So you can pick it up on Amazon, or you can contact me directly on Facebook, Samantha Francis Positive Parenting, or on my website, SamanthaFrancisPositiveParenting.co.uk. And I also have a confidence kids course that I recently launched as well that you can get access to either via the website or Facebook.
It's called a confidence course?
Yeah, confident kids course, and it's an online course, and it is for the parents, not the child.
Oh, do tell. What is this?
Yeah. So this is what everyone thought at the beginning when I launched it. They were like, oh, that's fantastic, a confident kids course. You know, how old does my child have to be to do it? And I was just like, no, they're not doing it. It's you that's going to do it. And there's chapters in there where they focus on that mirror that we spoke about, how your child is mirroring you, how to hold space for your child, how to communicate effectively to get the results you want from your child, connection, how to create connection, and all sorts like everyday activities, what to do when faced with things such as, oh, I've got a tummy ache before school, on, you know, or I don't want to do my chores, or, you know, so...
Yeah.
It covers the broad spectrum. It's like a foundations of parenting, and it's, yeah, I'm proud of it.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, we'll make sure we put up a link to that. We had one comment here that said, I'm having issues why many have to adjust to the misbehaved kids and well-behaved have to be put aside because they don't need the help or the resources. Discipline is necessary. It's needed and wanted by children. So this sounds like somebody who's struggling with... her child being around kids that are like misbehaved, and sounds like the squeaky wheel gets the oil kind of thing.
It's kind of true. I've heard that a lot, even from my own kids. Like, they'll come home and say, oh, we got punished because people in the class weren't listening, or, you know, we had to stay behind because a few of the kids were misbehaving. And yeah, it's a difficult one because it's frustrating as well. And I don't think it actually sends a very positive message to the children that are following rules and are actually doing the right thing.
I think it's a very communist way of teaching.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Everybody's the same. So you get the kids who are good and they're like, well, frig this, what do I have to be good for anymore? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And then they start losing the motivation to follow the rules, and they're just saying, well, if we're going to get punished for doing the right thing,
yeah,
why bother?
Yeah, I mean, look, unless you're on a team, a sports team, where, you know, team is everything. But when you talk about individual people who are not part of a team and yet, you know, thrown into a place of education, and they're being punished for, you know, the sins of others, I think that's a very dangerous place, because I think what's being communicated to the good kids is that you're the same. When we should be saying, no, you're different. And that's why you're going to be going out and playing, and they're going to be staying in. And if you act up, then you're going to be staying in with them.
And it's something that I, even up to now, I don't fully understand, because a lot of the time in schools, like, they know who these kids are because it's usually the same kids, right?
The problem kids.
But yet they punish the whole as a collective again. And yeah, this is why I'm going, next year I'm looking to go into schools to kind of do a lot of talks and workshops on things like this, because without them realizing it, they're not doing any justice for the kids that want to learn and are trying to do the right thing. They're not helping them. If anything, it's detrimental to them.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I agree. I think that, you know, I don't know, is it, I don't want to say this is what I think it is, but I'm going to ask, is it possible that, is it like laziness on like the educator part or the education system?
You know, that's a controversial kind of thing to kind of, put out there, but I'll answer it. I don't know if it's necessarily laziness, but I do know from having friends in the education system and everything like that, is that they are heavily burdened. And I think they're under so much stress and pressure as well that sometimes maybe it is an easier thing to just...
Yeah, that's it. Nobody's going out.
Yeah. But realistically, I think what would be beneficial for the kids that don't listen and the kids that do is to actually separate them, and to not physically, but at least know who needs extra support and where, and connect with parents. And this is, again, it boils down to the parents as well. Like, if your child is having issues at school, the parent needs to know so the parent can take some kind of responsibility and help the school to correct it.
Yeah. And that's what we said before, as far as the, you know, not my child, that mentality has to go out the friggin' window.
Yeah.
You know, because I see that all the time with parents where they're unable to recognize the truth. If their kid, if my kid's acting up, I want to know.
Yeah.
These parents don't want to know.
I know.
You know, and I don't know what that's about. I don't get it.
A lot of the time, it's the fact that, you know, if you say to a parent, you know, your child's misbehaving, your child's not listening, it hits them in a way where they feel like, oh my God, I'm not a good parent.
So it's a reflection on them.
Yeah. And they don't, and a lot of the time it triggers them because they've got stuff going on already. And this is why I say to people, you know, deal with your stuff, or as much as you can do, because when certain situations happen with your children, you want to act from a place of education and heart, not from a place of pain or being triggered about something else that actually is nothing to do with this particular situation. Some people find it really hard to hear that maybe they're not doing as well as they could be. Mm-hmm. Me personally, just like you, I want to know if my child is messing up at school. I want to know if they're not listening. I want to know so I can help them and so I can be a better parent for them.
Absolutely.
You know, and
absolutely.
It just makes everything so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I feel like we just solved the world's problems in this conversation.
We can only hope.
Well, you know, I mean, look, whether they listen or not is up to them. You know what I mean? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't force him to drink.
Definitely.
Well, listen, Samantha, I am so grateful. Thank you. I really, really, really enjoy our conversations. And just so you know, on a personal level, I get so much out of them. So thank you.
That's amazing. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you for just being a part of this and stuff. And,